Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the Framework of Operating Principles Cross-Community Working Group call held on the 10th of May, 2016. On the call today, we have Alan Greenberg, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Jim Galvin, John Berard, and Becky Burr. Joining us a little later in the call will be Aubrey Doria. I have listed apologies from Anne Beth Lang. From staff, we have David Tate, Mary Wong, Steve Chan, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, John.
Thank you very much, Terry. This is John Berard, one of the co-chairs of the working group. I didn't realize Becky was on the line. I didn't see her name. Oh, there you are. Becky, you're the other co-chair. I wonder if there's any point or comment you'd like to make before we jump into this. I cannot hear Becky. Did I catch her by surprise?
And this is Terry. Becky, you've not joined on audio, and I don't see your mic is activated at this
okay.
time.
Well, let me just say then, from your colleagues here on the working group, congratulations on your election. And we look forward to seeing you up on the dais for many years to come. Having said that, I think we should probably move pretty quickly into the work that we have to do, which I think the staff has helped us get mostly done. Coming up on the screen, if you are in Adobe, is, as said, the tabular summary of public comments. I don't see it. Am I the only one?
It looks like it's trying to load because I can see the title, so it might just be taking a moment to John and Cheryl here.
And this is Terry.
I see
it's populated on mine.
All right, I can't see it on mine, but I'm hopeful that everybody on the call had a chance to go through it. I thought it was mostly fine. Having gone through the individual comments, however, I think it misses some of the emotional content of the comments. And there were a couple of points that I'd like to throw on the table with regard to that. The first one having to do with the commitment to diversity. Picking up from the comments from France, the notion of gender, geography, and group diversity, which is in keeping, I think, with our intent. But there was an undercurrent that was also reflected in the board and also, surprisingly, I thought, in Stefan's comments for the registries about the notion of working groups becoming captive. I think in our discussions, we had thought that putting a number to membership and creating separate categories of participants and observers, allowing that members would be the only people who could cast a vote when a vote was to be cast, was our way of making sure that working group, cross-community working groups would not be captive. But there still seems to be some level of emotional concern about that. So I'll open with that and ask anybody who wants to comment on whether I am misreading it or, and if not, how we might address it in our documents. Alan, your hand is raised.
Thank you. I think the evidence from the recent CWG and CCWG meetings at the IANA and accountability are that chairs are exceedingly reluctant, and that's an understatement, to differentiate between the two categories. in making decisions, and it would only be when pressed under the direst of circumstances that at least the chairs of the five co-chairs we've had of the recent groups would be willing to differentiate. So, Alan,
differentiate between the two. Which two are you referring
between,
to specifically?
Between participants and members.
Well, this is John again. Am I fantasizing when I think that we have been quite clear that members are the final word?
I don't think you've been fantasizing on what we've said, but the evidence is that there is an extreme reluctance, and I don't know any other words to put it than say it's stronger, bordering on the absolute refusal to differentiate between the two in operationally in the working groups. That's the evidence of the groups that have put in thousands of hours of work at this point.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is John again. We are creating a framework here. We're not creating a strict set of rules. And the framework, I think we have agreed correctly and sensibly, should be that if we intend for the outcomes of these cross-community work groups to be seen with any level of validity, to be not just accepted but implemented by the sponsoring SOs and ACs, that the decision-making process, the path to consensus needs to be needs to have some integrity. And so I would suggest that we reinforce the notion or reinforce the point that the underlying integrity of a cross-community working group begins with a diverse set of participants that touch gender, geography, and group, but that ultimately depends upon the judgment of its members, so as to prevent the group being held captive. I mean, if everybody's got five members, but some group throws in 25 participants, that would create an unfair imbalance. Any comment on that?
John Sherrill here. I think we reinforce that. I think you're far from fantasizing. I think it's exactly what we've said, and there are very good reasons to say that and to follow it. But Alan's observation, whilst being absolutely accurate and correct, I don't think is a criticism. I think it's the strength in what our framework has put down. And I think it's been an extraordinarily useful, as saying leverage tool, but believe me, from the leadership teams, because I've functioned on the leadership teams of both of those mentioned groups, the almost implied threat that if need be, if we don't get to these consensus points, if we don't as a community, get to this particular end game by this particular time, we'll simply revert to the members will cast their vote and so it allows us to actually, and then that will be the outcome. It's allowed us to actually avoid capture as best as possible, I think, very effectively by stopping. It's like a tiebreaker without there being a tie. Those vociferous groups that are trying to say, we're not going to move and everyone else has got to, come to our particular drumbeat here, can't hold out on a group effectively, even if it is, 25 of them and only five of everybody else, because the five of everybody else gets to have the final say. And that does ensure a diversity and a balance. There's always the fallback, which is hand in glove with this, that is, of course, individual or even sectoral, subsectoral opinion can go in as a dissenting opinion. I think it's actually forced better discussion. It's probably contributed to many more of the hours in some of these discussions, but I think the community has had a better outcome because of what our framework is saying, being able to be used as leverage when push comes to shove, as it does at various points in these processes. So I think we're clear, and I think it's a really useful tool. Thank you.
Okay, this is John again. Mary and others there, Steve, Terry, setting aside the notion of being able to use it as a cudgel or as leverage, which some people may not appreciate, although is quite valuable, is it possible to reinforce the language in our report or in the summary of public comments that we heard this and feel that it is more than satisfied by the role that we have created for or has been suggested for members in a cross-community working group? Can that be done?
John, this is Mary. Thanks, John. Hi, everybody. It's Mary from staff. And in response to your question, John, if that is the view of the group, then the staff view is that we should certainly have that sort of statement included in the final report or the final framework. One of the things that this group may want to consider is to have the final framework simply set forth the final principles, as we agree on them, and have a sort of explanatory summary or memorandum to accompany it that we can more at greater length elaborate on exactly points like this, what we considered, how we considered, and what decision we came to as a result. In addition to this particular...
I'm sorry, Mary, go ahead.
I was just going to say that the other thing I was going to say was that in addition to just the suggestion, there's probably a couple of other points where the group would probably want to have some kind of explanation for either accepting or not amending your initial views as a result of some public comments received, and we can raise those as we get to them. Thanks.
Okay. This is John. Alan, your hand is up. Is it from before or
that's,
now?
No, that's a new hand. Thank you. It's interesting. Both Cheryl, in defending what had happened and saying it is a good thing, and by the way, I'm not saying whether it's bad or good that the co-chairs are very reluctant to use the member card, as it were. It's a fact, though. And certainly in the past CCWGs, and I think we have to acknowledge that. Your statement saying that the multi-stakeholder, the balanced multi-stakeholder interests are served by having the members and giving them the ultimate say is probably exactly what the co-chairs would say and the leadership of the CWGs would say. That is the reason they do not want to disenfranchise the participants. That is, this is a bottom-up process and everyone should have an opportunity to speak. Cheryl is correct that it may not have significantly altered the outcome, although I would question that. At some point, people get tired of fighting and give in because of the continual positions taken by some people. And but it certainly, as she said, has extended the number of hours and the complexity of the process. So that may be a good thing. I'm not making a value judgment, but I think we have to acknowledge that that does seem to be the dynamic that has emerged out of these CWGs that we've recently seen, or CCWGs that are on exceedingly important issues. And discussions can be swayed. Capture may be too strong a word, but if you look, for instance, at the IANA CWG, at the beginning of it, a very few number of very vocal people, most of whom were not members, controlled the overall direction of that group and ultimately the final outcome. And I think we have to acknowledge that as a reality. It may be a good one, maybe a bad one, but it's a reality. Thank you.
This is John. Let me ask a point of clarification there. So I have been thinking about clarity coming at the end when proposals get a hearing and a vote, which is limited to members. But what you're suggesting is that the agenda that gets set by everybody who can participate may have as much, if not more, influence on the outcome of the working group.
The IANA CWG definitely demonstrated that. I could be more specific, but I don't really want to start food fights at this point.
No, that's not necessary. I see your point. This is John again. The advantage that we have is that we are proposing guidelines. We are not dictating terms. And we believe, as a working group, that the best approach would be as we have described it. But that does not mean that that is the approach that must be taken. And so maybe that's our wiggle room, to be able to be more specific, yet still allow for a little chaos to slip into the system. I've stunned you all into silence, eh? Mary?
No, I've got a little check mark up. It's Cheryl, John. I don't disagree with what Alan said, but what it's also going to do is, and possibly because of the experiences that he was outlining with the CWG, is it's going to make the ACs and the SOs also, with using our guidelines more effectively, to be honest, take it more bloody seriously. I mean, I know, what you just did then, you know, have I stunned you all into silence? How many hours of other groups in the past have we seen where basically it's whoever is holding the pen or running the call, you know, I mean, they may as well have just been drafting the document and sending us out for us to all ignore because, you know, very little other contribution happens. And that's a quality of in inverted commas, the membership that's put in to those groups. By allowing the members and participants model to somewhat organically grow, and there was in fact a evolution in how that was managed, even with the CWG and the CCWG almost running in parallel, and again, I say that, you know, having worked in the leadership team of both of those, it showed very quickly that there is a huge importance to making sure that there is diverse contribution happening right back from the first drafting of principles and agendas and how we break up into work streams or whatever we're calling them or otherwise. And it became quite obvious to any AC or SO who cared to actually contribute and make a difference that they had to put people in who were going to be active, work, and, you know, be part of the interaction from the very, very beginning. I'm not sure that's a bad thing. I think that's a damn good thing. But, you know, as you say, we're putting framework together. I think it's a darn good framework, and I think we can probably strengthen, based on some of the input from the public comments, some of our positions to make them highly recommended and give good examples, as staff were just suggesting. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Cheryl. Mary, your hand is up. Oh, yes.
Yes, it was. Thanks, John, and thanks, Cheryl. So I think I was going to make somewhat similar comments to Cheryl from the staff perspective, but in terms of this being a framework of principles, one question that we had going through the public comments was whether or not we as a group would want to clarify in the final frame that, or, you know, how flexible this framework is. Cheryl just, you know, used the example that we might want to say that certain of the elements or principles are highly recommended. It may even be that certain of the principles should not be departed from unless there is good reason and a drafting team for a particular CCWG charter has a rationale for that. The example I have in mind is this concept that we all coalesced around very early on about having one single charter that is embraced or adopted by all the participating chartering organizations. Others may be highly recommended and others may be optional. So we may not want to get into that much granularity, but I think that was just something that we wanted to offer up for this group to consider, given the feedback that we've now received and given Cheryl's comments as well. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Mary. This is John again. you make a very good point. I think it was probably the first thing that we all agreed to, which was that none of this works unless there is a single charter. And it's I think, written in our report that the basic definition of a cross-community working group is that there be a single charter from the supporting SOs and ACs. I don't know how you could conduct a cross-community working group otherwise. But if we, what's the thinking of the folks on the line of categorizing our recommendations or noting each of the recommendations as being strongly recommended, essential, strongly recommended, or optional? That's, to me, that's, it strikes me as being a step away from guidelines and a step toward rules, which is not a direction I want to travel. But if there needs to be some distinction made between and among the recommendations, then maybe that's the one that we should use. Anybody have anything to say? Alan, yes?
Yeah, thank you. Every CCWG or whatever has a charter group, a charter drafting group, that is going to take this their job seriously. So I would be reluctant to say anything is mandatory, but I like the idea of assigning weights to ones that some of the, which we feel strongly about and other ones we think are nice things to consider but may not be particularly important one way or another. Thank you.
Okay, this is John again. How do we determine which is which?
You're asking me. That's a stomach.
Well, it's, I sort of thrown it onto the table there, yeah. You know. Jim, I see your hand up.
So, Jim Galvin for the transcript. I think what's going on in my mind here, I appreciate, you know, the questions and concerns that folks have about how some of these principles might be applied. But I think that to leverage off of what Alan just suggested, you know, that's the role of the chartering group in my mind, right? I'm hesitant to try and distinguish between what's important and what's not important. And my reason for that is because if we start going down that path, then my feeling is we're getting very specific based on our current understanding today about how things work and what's important. And I can't evolve. I mean, the community evolves, you know, the internet evolves, and I'm more inclined to suggest that, you know, this is a set of principles. We should be very clear about why a principle is important. So, and I think we do that. We indicate this principle came about, you know, for these reasons. It's valuable in these kinds of circumstances. This it's not intended to be the only circumstances in which it's valid, but it's valid under these kinds of rules. And I think what we really want to do is put the onus on the chartering groups to take seriously all of these principles and, you know, within its own remit, decide how it wants to prioritize, if you will, or decide what's important or what's not important. What's a must-have versus a may-have, those kinds of issues. Even on this issue of voting, you know, participation versus observers, I'm more inclined to think that there's a voting set and there's not a voting set, and we've covered that issue just fine. But if a chartering group wants to change that, you know, fine. I'm not going to, you know, fall on my sword over it. But I think that's my point. I'm not inclined to try and wait these things. If anything, I would suggest give it to the chartering group to do. And we should simply make sure that we justify why we think the principle is important and then leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. This is John again. You know, I appreciate you being able to rationally describe my emotional unease with categorizing our recommendations. I think your point is correct, and I agree with it. I think I saw some green check marks there as well on the side. So I think we should move forward with the notion that we are not going to categorize our recommendations, but we as we have make and explain our recommendations. The one thing before we move away from membership, which I think started all this notion of diversity and being captive, the IPC comments reflect what I have heard a lot in the BC, which is this notion that groups inside the GNSO are buried too deep to be heard. The IPC talked about a lack of direct representation. I don't think that that's a matter for us to break new ground on in this framework, but I wonder if we should at least acknowledge that we heard this comment and feel that the construction of a cross-community working group, the chairs are quite are able to modify membership as they see fit, rather than suggest in our report that we need to do something about what the IPC has described as a lack of direct representation. Any comment on that, Aubrey? Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, and apologies for being late. I did have another meeting that had to end. This is Aubrey speaking. I tend to think, first of all, in none of the groups that the cross-community groups that I have been working in, I've actually noticed either the IPCBC not having a strong voice. And that may be one of the things, though, that we want to load into the discussion of participation versus membership, and why having a broader participant group is sometimes considered to be a good thing, in that it enables a broader scope of voices, so that when, you know, in terms of a parity between SOs and ACs, you limit membership to a certain number of members, I mean, a certain number of individuals, that you aren't closing off the opportunity for broader voice and such. So I actually think that that would be the place to sort of discuss that, you know, because we can ever break the SOAC, the stakeholder groups, the ROLOs, the constituencies, et cetera, down into ever smaller pieces, if we want to say, well, that's a reason for more members. But I think it's really more important to sort of talk about the need for that level of representation at membership sometimes, but really from a voice perspective, that's one of the arguments for the participation of participants as opposed to just members. So that's what I would tend to look at for that. Thanks.
So this is John again. Let me see if I understand. You're suggesting that there really need not be any changes made to what we're recommending, but perhaps we could reinforce the notion of the participant.
I think so. That is where that voice comes in, and make sure that is one of the things that people consider.
All right. Well, great. Let's make note of that. And is there any objection to that point? Because I don't want to overstate something that one, you know, that one comment made. But I hear it a lot, not just in the IPC, from the IPC, but within the BC, about this lack of direct representation. I just want to make sure that we feel we have it covered. When I started this meeting, I said that there were three things that I thought had some emotional content in the comments that weren't reflected in our summary of them. The second one is this, the role of the Cross-Community Working Group in implementation. So as I understood it, as I went through these comments, you know, so the Cross-Community Working Group comes together, it does its work, it sends its product, work product to each of the supporting SOs and ACs, and then essentially is done. There seems to be some interest among some of the comments, again, going back to France, looking at the registries, that there be some ability of the Cross-Community Working Group to participate in, to influence, to monitor, to promote implementation. I will say that I don't think that's the role of the Cross-Community Working Group. But I wanted to put it on the table here to get some thought as to whether we should address it, or, and if we do, which way should we address it. So I see, is Aubrey, your hand still up, or is that new?
Nope, that's a new hand.
Why don't you start?
I'm making up for lost time. I apologize. I guess I disagree with you. I think that any time there's a recommendation of something that needs to be implemented, then it really opens up the door to some sort of implementation team that follows along. And we see it now. We noticed almost immediately in the CWG IANA that the implementation was not resembling what some people thought it should resemble. And basically a group was put together to consult with the ICANN staff while the implementation was being designed. And so now the group still exists, and it's not quite like a GNSO working group with its separate implementation review team. But I think that should be one of the tools in the framework toolkit that basically says, if you're recommending something that requires implementation, then it is also reasonable for you to consider recommending the follow-through of some sort of implementation review. I mean, in the CWG IANA, it actually got called an implementation oversight team, and that may be going further than you'd want to go. But an implementation review team is, because we're never as clear as we think we are when we're suggesting something. And if something that needs to be implemented is a result, then I think it's something that any group should really consider the recommendation of, you know, the formation of. Thanks.
All right. This is John again. So let me see if I hear what you say. Are you suggesting that the Cross-Community Working Group isn't closed until after implementation? Or are you saying that there is some subset of the Cross-Community Working Group that can be empaneled to help promote, monitor implementation? That's the first question. The second question is, wouldn't the members from the affected SO or AC have that responsibility? So if the GNSO is dealing with the implementation of outcomes of a cross-community working group, wouldn't the five members of the cross-community working group who came from the GNSO have the responsibility to monitor, push, promote the implementation? So those are two questions.
Yeah.
And Aubrey, you can start, please.
Right. Sorry. On the first question, I don't know whether it matters. I think in some cases the group stays c- created but dormant, just to deal with an issue if there is one. And I don't see a harm in that, but, you know, sometimes they can be closed and there's just the remainder of the implementation review team. Mm-hmm. I think in terms of just saying, and in your second question, so I think it can go either way. I think, you know, it really depends on how much they think you might need more consultation with the group as things are going on. In terms of your second question, I think to just sort of assume that the people that were members will follow through is not likely to happen unless they're specifically taking on the role of doing that and acknowledging it. And also, I think if the recommendation is coming out of a cross-community working group, then that review team really has to have some sense of that cross-community nature and such. And, you know, it's still, you're right to the extent that if there is an issue, if there is a problem that can't be resolved amicably with the implementation team, then certainly it does revert to those chartering groups to say, hey, you know, this is the review team reports, this is having a problem, we need to consult, we need help. But right. But I think that if you don't have specific people, a specific team that knows they're doing it, and that the ICANN staff knows that they are the address. And one of the things about these groups is they need to be ready for a much quicker reaction time often than the cross-community working group had. I mean, for example, with the one that, you know, for the CWG IANA, there's two meetings scheduled a week. They might be canceled, but there's really supposed to be very quick turnaround on any questions, on any clarifications and such. So it's a different sort of thing. Thanks.
So this is John Allen. I see your hand is up, and I want to get to you, but I want to inject something in here before. We could either create a recommendation that there be the possibility for an implementation review mechanism that's part of the cross-community working group, or we could say that that such support can be created by asking the chair or the co-chairs to make that happen. I mean, so it could either be established in advance as a subset of the cross-community working group, or it can be by asking the chair or co-chairs to make it happen. I don't know if either or which is better. But, Alan, one of the things that I'd like you to address as you offer your comments, in the ALAC comments is the notion that each AC and SO should decide for itself the use of the outputs. That's the phrase in it, use of the outputs. And I wonder if what we're talking about might influence or be influenced by that particular comment from ALAC. So if you could talk about that as well as your why you raised your hand, that'd be great.
Thank you. I don't think there's actually an interaction, but I will talk about both. In terms of how you handle the implementation, I'm not sure there's a one-size-fits-all. In the GNSO PDP working groups, we came up with the concept of an implementation review team, or I think that was the title. I had the pleasure or something of presiding over the first one, and it was really clear. I mean, the concept didn't exist, but it was clear that we needed some sort of sanity check on what the staff was doing to implement the PDP recommendations, and we sort of insisted that there be the volunteers within the loop. Getting actual participation was like pulling the proverbial hen's teeth. The level of exhaustion of the PDP working group members at the end was such that we'd come to closure, we'd made recommendations. I don't want to talk about that again. and there were one or two of us who did oversee the staff implementation, and there were some problems with it, and we got them fixed along the way. I think the situation is quite different if you look at something at the other end of the spectrum and look at the accountability CCWG, where the implications are so onerous that people are not going to walk away from this. Some might, but not all. And I think you do need an implementation review team, and you probably want to keep the group in some sort of level of suspended state or not very active state to be convened should there be something which the implementation review team feels, we just didn't, we can't just interpret what was done with any certainty. We may want to go back to the group. You may never do that, but I think you to dissolve the group says you don't have the option of doing that. So I think a group must be able to stay alive past the recommendations and even the acceptance of the recommendations. In regard to what the issue that you raised on the ALAC comment, we feel very strongly that a single group should not be able to essentially veto recommendations, and that if one of the chartering groups says, no, we're not supporting it, and this has happened in the past, and it's one of the reasons this group exists, there should be nothing prohibiting one of the chartering organizations from using the output. Now, they can't claim it has been accepted by everyone, but that shouldn't mean that they're not even allowed to send it in an email. Essentially, we said there's work being done. The outcome of the CWG, just like a GNSO PDP, may not be definitive, may not be crystal clear, but we shouldn't prohibit the use of the output, with, of course, the proviso that it has to be presented honestly and candidly. Thank you.
All right. I don't understand the acronym, Mary.
As far as I know.
John, that's for as far as I know, as the kiddies say, I would say.
Oh, my goodness. I'm still brushing up on my emojis for dummies. Come on now.
That was an old one.
Well, older than even I suppose. So where does that leave us? Does that leave us that we want to specifically state that the cross-community working group should remain in some state of suspended animation? Should it be required to reconvene to handle implementation questions? And then when the process is fully ended or implemented, only then would the cross-community working group be disbanded? Is that the sense of the group? Jim, I see your hand up.
So thank you, Jim Gallen, for the transcript. I will offer to you what ESSEC does internally. We've actually just created a new process and just started, just as sort of an example of how one might handle these kinds of things. Most of you, or hopefully all of you, will know that there's this new, board advice tracker thing, which is coming into existence. In fact, it's ESSEC and ALAC's advice the first time around, which were embedded into it as part of some early tests. And, ESSEC is still engaged with the CTO's office in building the next generation of the tool and working through our advice. And they take in recommendations. Their intent is to track them all. And one of the things that's interesting is, so an ESSEC document is submitted to the board, and the way the process is working now, some staff takes that in, and they look through it, and they look at the recommendations, and then they decide what they're supposed to do with the recommendation. And the process that we've put in place is ICANN, on the receiving side, takes in a recommendation. It actually looks at it, and then it drafts what it thinks is going to be the execution of that recommendation, and then it sends it back to the ESSEC admin committee, and we have to evaluate it. So speaking now as vice chair of ESSEC, we have to evaluate it and decide what to do next. And what's interesting is the work party that probably created that particular document has now long since been disbanded. Long is kind of relative there, but it's been disbanded, which is the situation that we're talking about here. And so the question is, you know, how do we decide whether or not they properly interpreted the recommendation of doing the right thing? And the path that we've taken so far, which seems to work, is that we reach back to the chairs of the work party within ESSAC, who is responsible, primary responsibility for that document. And, you know, it's their job to assess whether or not it has been properly interpreted, and if not, they might reach out to other working group members. In other words, I guess for us, it's become kind of ad hoc. You can disband the group, but you still have that institutional record of who was in the group and their roles, and you simply go back to those individuals that you can, and you ask them to help you. You know, I mean, if you need more than that, if there's a substantive issue that has to be dealt with, then you might have to reconstitute a group or something, I suppose. But so far, that model has worked for us. We just depend on the institutional memory of the chairs and the notes from the work party itself to deal with it. And I don't know if that's helpful here, but it's a model that's working for us and might be worth some consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Mary, before I turn to you, I want to ask Jim a question. Do you think, Jim, that the utility of that approach for ESSAC is dependent or is linked to the fact that you deal more in technical matters and that most of the cross-community working group activity we've seen is more policy and political?
So actually, John, when we were talking about what process to use here, the issue that we found most interesting to us is one of time. I think that's probably more a concern than the content, if you will. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's a certain amount of churn in participation and membership. I mean, maybe less so when it comes to chairs of work parties and work groups and such. I mean, they do tend to stick around. But, you know, we felt that the issue was when you're trying to decide what to do with a recommendation, if you don't get on it right away, will the people still be around who can help you sort something out if it needs to be sorted out?
Yeah.
And I think that's probably more of a concern than whether it's technical or policy oriented or something. And that probably doesn't have an easy fix. It just kind of is what it is, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Mary, your hand was up.
Thanks, John, and thanks, Jim. So, you know, going back to your question, John, and Jim's suggestions, in terms of what to do, if anything, about this point in the final framework, I think from the staff perspective, we would be a little bit cautious about having any recommendation or guideline that says the CCWG in question stays open through implementation or through some point thereof, for a number of reasons. One is that the implementation role is very different or can be very different from developing the recommendations in the first place. Another is, you know, the dependency or the use or reliance on resources, whether that be calls or staff or budget. And on this last point, John, I don't know what your third big issue was, but we did get some comments, including and especially from the board, about questions relating to resources and budget. So from the staff perspective, we would probably say that to the extent that this group wants to say something about the role of the CCWG in implementation more than we have to date, I mean, clearly, as Bart and others have said, I think, Alan, that this can be part of the recommendations, and maybe we can say something like, to the extent that it is important for a CCWG to monitor or track implementation, that should be part of the recommendation. We could go a bit further than that, but to have the suspended animation or to equivocally say to keep it open is probably a path that we might want to think a little bit more on before recommending. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Mary. This is John. I'm not I'm not in favor of suspended animation. It just sounded like there was a turn on the part of the people on the call that there be some ability to call back to the cross-community working group. And maybe we just want to acknowledge that one method may be as practiced in the ESSAC, which would allow for any participating SONAC to re-engage with the cross-community working group by using the by contacting the chair or co-chair of the group, so that it becomes an active request as opposed to a passive monitoring process. So I appreciate. I did find the board's comments about the drain the use of resources somewhat ironic, but it doesn't mean that it's not. That's not true, and I see Bart has, in classic Dutch efficiency, noted that sometimes the chair or the co-chairs become inactive. I think that's true, and is also a bridge that will have to be crossed, as it has been in the past. Should we reach it in the future? I don't think we want to start dictating terms that if you are a chair or co-chair, you must remain involved with ICANN for the next 5 calendar years. Yeah. The third point that struck me in terms of emotional undercurrent is this notion of consensus. Are we clear enough in our recommendations?
Sorry,
as to what consensus means, how we get there. I think that it's linked in some respect to this notion of implementation. And I think we relied mostly upon the CCNSO to give us a sense of consensus. And Becky, are you able to jump on the call? Are you able to participate now?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Are you comfortable that we have dealt effectively with the notion of what is consensus and what isn't, and how we get there?
I thought that the point was to be not prescriptive about it, but to require clarity. And I think that that's the one area where we get into trouble.
So I thought
we dealt with it fine.
Okay. And what, anybody else? Jim, your hand is still up. Is that from previous?
I wanted to make a point on the previous discussion. It's been up for that, but so continue with what you're doing first.
Okay. So is there any other comment, or can we agree that Becky is correct and we did such exemplary work that we don't really need to address the consensus any more deeply? All right. I guess we're good on that, and I was just being too precious in my thought. Jim, go ahead. What was your point?
So I see that the consensus in the notes, and I'm sorry, Jim Galvin, for the transcript, the consensus in the notes there was to try and adopt, sort of the model that the ESSAC had for how to deal with future analysis or understanding of recommendations. I wanted to add 2 points to this just for the record so that we have it here when we're thinking about what we might additionally want to say. ESSAC also, we thought about this issue of resources and costs. I mean, as all working groups do and all of subordinate AC groups, you have a secretariat staff. And so there's some costs associated with, maintaining open groups with those things. And that's kind of, from our point of view, what we worried about. You want to shut down working groups. You want to shut down work parties because you're holding resources open for dealing with them. And so you want to go down that path, and you're looking for a way to make that work. But in that spirit, we also made one other observation, which I think is probably relevant here. We have, when we have work parties, you know, there's a separate mailing list that's created for the work parties that allows them to conduct work. Just as here, you have working groups, cross-community working groups, they have mailing lists that are created, and those archives are there. One of the things that you can do, if you're worried about chairs who might suddenly become inactive and you can't reach out to the chairs to help you in your analysis, I mean, they would be the first go-to when you need some further consideration of what a recommendation was, is you simply reach out to the mailing list. And that was the part of the process that we laid out for ourselves in ESSAC, was realizing that we have those sub-mailing lists available, and maybe that's something worth calling out in our document here too. As long as they don't disable the mailing list per se, and they leave that at least available, then you have a means to reach out if you should lose touch with your chairs to helpfully find someone else who can help you and move you forward. And there's all kinds of administrative things one can do if you worry about spam on mailing lists and stuff. You know, you just moderate the list so it goes to staff and it can all be dealt with. Anyway, that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. This is John again. I think that that's a reasonable approach, and if we can clearly state that, it would probably be helpful, and certainly would be responsive to some of the comments. We are at an hour. Is there anything? There's a couple more points that I wanted to cover, more process driven than substance. Is there anything that anybody else wants to bring up from a substantive perspective? Okay. From a process perspective, Mary, what are the next steps as you have laid them out to us?
This is Mary from staff. So I think the next milestone for us, we had previously thought, would be the production of a proposed final framework for the two of our chartering organizations and also the rest of the community. Before that, though, it would seem that we now have on the Helsinki schedule a cross-community open dialogue session. It is one of the new things being tried for this new format of Meeting B, and we are one of the topics. And Becky and John, I believe that you may be meeting with some board members next week to discuss the lead up to that session. So in terms of timeline, we could do a couple of meetings between now and Helsinki, and as part of those couple of meetings, we probably want to do our own prep for Helsinki, and hopefully by Helsinki, we will at least have a draft of a final framework we can then refine following that community session in Helsinki for final submission. Does that help, John?
It does very much. This is John again. The meeting with George and Becky in Amsterdam, I think it's next week. My goodness, going to Amsterdam on Sunday. Next week. It was why I raised the question in the first place. I would love for us to have a revised version of the tabular summary, the document that you sent out to us, Mary, earlier, for my and Becky's use with George when we meet in Amsterdam, which means some getting a new version of that document, incorporating what we talked about here this morning for us to take him through. My concern is that if when the three of us sit down, that George will overweight the input from the board on our discussion, and I'd like to be able to portray the cross-community inputs more effectively as a counterbalance, just in case we have to. Becky, do you think I'm being overly cautious, or do you think that's prudent?
No, I think that's a good idea. I think that's a good idea.
So the question is, can we create that new summary document that you sent us, Mary, to incorporate some of this, the discussion we had here today, by the time we meet. And I will tell you that that meeting with George is... Becky, do you know right offhand when we're meeting with him? I think it's the...
No, I don't, I'm not even sure it's been scheduled. But I could be wrong about that.
It's either going to be the 17th, 18th, or the 19th.
Yeah, the I think I responded to
John, this is Mary again.
Yes, Mary.
I'm sorry, Becky. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to confirm that as far as I know, it hasn't been scheduled, but I also wanted to note that Steve Chan, who is one of the staff supporting you guys, as you know, will be in Amsterdam, and he has agreed to try to help schedule and organize everybody for that meeting. The other point that I also wanted to note was that in addition to George Sadowski, the other board member who is likely to be involved and who has been involved on the board side on this is Chris Despain. And actually, I did have one final point on that, which is that George and Chris actually have been sent the report of staff comments. In fact, the whole board has the report of comments that we publish on the website, and George and Chris have a copy of this tabular summary. So we can certainly update it as you requested, John. We can even break out some of the big points that you had, like diversity and implementation, into their separate boxes, and we will have that for you guys by Monday.
Okay. All right. This is John again. My concern is that if indeed there is going to be a session in Helsinki, I would like it to have the benefit of a specific work product from our working group, right? I'd like, if we can be helpful in guiding that conversation, keeping it on rails that we think are appropriate, rather than see it be hijacked or diverted for other purpose, I would really like to be able to do that. So having the document in hand, I think will play a role in that.
John, this is Mary again. If it will help, we, as staff, we do think it would be good if you, Becky, and the group, at some point fairly shortly, could agree on what you would like to have as the objectives, as well as the format in Helsinki. As far as I know, there has not been any prescribed format for this kind of dialogue in Helsinki. What I was told when I asked was that we prefer that it not be a line of people at the phone. We prefer that it not be a panel of people just talking at the audience. It should really be a dialogue. So it seems to me that we probably have an opportunity to really try and make this session as instructive and as constructive, both for our final work as well as for the community, as we can.
All right. Thank you for that, Mary. I suspect that'll be the subject of a separate call, or maybe a asymmetric email exchange, rather than try and handle that right now. So speaking of right now, is there anything else that we ought to cover, or can we ring off and keep this hour-long meeting to an hour and 10 minutes?
John, just quickly, is Mary again. Should we try and at least get on the mailing list to schedule another meeting, or should we try to schedule it, say, 2 weeks from now and have that on everyone's calendar? And I see Jim has asked a similar question.
Is 2 weeks from now, the 24th, does that work for people?
Works for me.
At the same time? Well, maybe we could make it a little bit later. But what time is it for you, Bart?
Well, The question is, what time is it for Cheryl?
Yeah, I'm just thinking, should we make it at 20 UTC instead of 18? I'm sensitive to the fact that it's 2 o'clock in the morning where in Singapore, that it's 4 o'clock in the morning in down under, but that it's also 9 o'clock at night in Europe. Maybe you could play with the time and setting it up, Mary. See, I've injected a little chaos into the thing here. Right? Cheryl is fine.
John, I noticed that Cheryl says she's fine with the 1800 UTC time, and of course, from the staff perspective, we can work with whatever will work with for the group.
Okay, well, then let's keep it the same time. We'll do it on the 2 weeks from today, the 24th, and we'll go from there. So having with that, I guess our work this morning is completed. I want to thank everybody. Becky, do you want to offer any insight or no?
No, okay. Just thanks to everybody, and we're getting quite a lot of interest on this piece of work.
I want to know where the heck they were at the start. Remember those meetings that we go to, and it would just be us talking to each other.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you all. Thank you, Mary and Steve and Terry, for putting this together.
Bye.
See you soon.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Yep.
Well, once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Thank you very much for joining. May, if you can please stop all recordings. Have a wonderful rest of your day.